Welcome to another edition of The Nature of Longevity, the program describing innovative approaches to restoring our health by reversing the damage happening in all of us, starting from the day we're born. Our show today focuses on one of the most severe environmental impacts on our health. Standard therapies can't touch it. It's happening in almost all of us, regardless of where we live. The great news you'll hear today is how doctors proved in clinical trials that the deadliest impacts of this problem are indeed reversible. If you've got diabetes or some form of heart condition already, or you know someone who does, or you want to prevent heart problems before they strike, you'll especially want to hear from today's guest. I'm speaking with Dr. Gervasio Lamas, Chief of Cardiology at Mount Sinai Medical Center in Miami, Florida, and at Columbia University in New York. For almost two decades, Dr. Lamas and his team conducted clinical trials that produced results so surprising that even he had a hard time believing them at first. In fact, he was expecting the trials to fail. After 10 years of clinical studies, funded by the U.S. National Institutes of Health, Dr. Lamas and his team discovered that it not only reversed the worst effects of one of the deadliest forms of heart disease, but it also removed large amounts of toxins that are found in all of us. None of the standard therapies prescribed today has succeeded in doing this. Actually, globally, at least 250,000 amputations and millions of blood vessel surgeries have to be performed to slow the progress of this disease. The culprit that Dr. Lamas' team identified is the toxic metals that get into us from our environment. These are present in tiny amounts in the food we eat, the water we drink, and the air we breathe. We don't see them, feel them, or taste them, and they usually have no perceptible effects at the start. But they do have a nasty way of building up that no standard therapy has been able to reverse. This problem is not new. It's been going on for thousands of years and has accelerated with the use of these metals in industry and in our daily lives. Now, going back to the Stone Age is not going to help us that much because many of those metals also get into us naturally. So we have to figure out either how to filter them out before they get into us or flush them out afterwards. That's what Dr. Lamas and his team tested successfully with patients. And it's available today in many parts of North and South America, as well as Europe and Asia. Dr. Lamas starts by explaining how he became involved with a clinical trial that uses a common food additive known as EDTA for this therapy.
I actually got involved in this because EDTA had been around as an alternative medicine treatment for many years. I'm a traditionally trained cardiologist, and I've done many clinical trials that have been difficult to do. So I thought that, you know, we could figure out this EDTA thing using clinical trials methodology. And my expectation was that the study would be negative, that at the end of it, we would either stop the study early because it was harmful to give EDTA, or at the end, the two curves would be identical. And we could just put EDTA, put it in the wastebasket of treatments that well-intentioned people tried but never worked. So I remember at the time my thought process. And it was, well, listen, we know this stuff doesn't work. We're doing a public service by showing it in a scientific way so that people don't spend their good, hard-earned money on these drugs. And we didn't give too much thought to the mechanism to start with. The study was long. It was a 10-year study, 1,700 patients. They had to receive 40 infusions apiece. About 60% received all 40. The others received some varying number. And like I said, the study took 10 years. It was really quite controversial at the time. People thought that we shouldn't be studying something that everyone knows doesn't work. And much to my surprise, at the very end, when the study was unblinded, remember, I was blinded. That is, I didn't know any of the results for a decade. Lo and behold, the darn study is positive. So then, you know, that's science is most interesting when you get an unexpected result. So then we were really scrambling. What the heck happened? How do we have this drug that everybody knows doesn't work, work? And it worked in, these were in patients who'd had a prior heart attack. We were able to reduce the risk of further coronary events by a modest 18%. Fine. But when you look at diabetic patients, the ones who had the highest risk, we were able to reduce their risk of death by 43% over 5 years. Of having another cardiac event by 41% over 5 years. That's actually spectacular. You don't see that with anything else. I mean, you just don't see this. It didn't control blood sugar. It was a different mechanism. And as we started thinking about it, and then because this was a study in which we were trying a treatment that was out there that we didn't think worked, the result was unexpected. And so at the very end, we say, oh my God, why did this work? And it became clear to us that what we had been doing was chelating and removing toxic metals from people's bodies. And then all of a sudden, it didn't seem so surprising that if you have people who are loaded with, as all of us are, by the way, loaded with toxic metals that are creating oxidative stress in your body and poisoning your cells, and you take some of it out, that the patients are going to do better. Taking out a poison makes you feel better, makes you live longer. And so we end up doing that study, which to me is the one that caps off the burden of proof that cadmium and lead are toxic, and that removing toxicity gets rid of the bad events that cadmium and lead are associated with. The first study was called the Trial to Assess Chelation Therapy, or TACT. So between TACT and the next iteration of this study, we went to FDA and presented it. And they said, this is interesting, the study is positive, the drug is safe, but you have to do it again because it's only a single study. But before we could start the next study, there was time. One of the groups that did the very best with EDTA were the patients who had diabetes. And diabetic patients also get a particularly vicious type of atherosclerosis in their lower extremities. And the arteries begin closing off, and patients begin initially losing digits of their feet and then end up getting major amputations, some of them, particularly diabetics who either do or have smoked. And so I was able to get funds from our hospital, who I have to say has been incredibly supportive and scientifically rigorous, and saying, this worked, you want to try it in people whose legs are and toes are about, or really are about to be amputated or about to fall off. Here's some money, why don't you try it? And in 10 patients with critical limb ischemia, is what it's called, we gave them infusions. Of those 10 patients, 7 did exceptionally well. One individual was, when I saw him, he had gangrene of his large toe on one foot, and it was sort of beginning encroaching into his midfoot, and he was scheduled for an amputation that would be of his calf below the knee. The wife fought his cardiologist to allow him to participate in my study because the cardiologist said, of course, everyone knows chelation doesn't work. This was about 4 years ago, and I saw this gentleman, I don't know, 6 months ago. His legs are on. He had no amputation. He is ambulating unaided. So then you go and try to get this published, right? And mind you, this is 10 patients, a little case series, but showing that something that never happened. Okay? And then what the journals want to know is, well, did you measure blood flow? Well, hell no, but why are the toes still on? you know, did you do tests to see the pressure, the blood pressure in the toes? Well, hell no, but it must be higher than it was at the beginning. Otherwise, why would the toes be up? You know, if somebody shows you what appears to be outside of your, you know, outside of your knowledge and outside of your experience, and you kind of nitpick at it to show that there's something invalid, when all you have to do is look at the guy who's wearing two shoes. He's wearing a pair of shoes instead of one shoe. So that was, that taught me a lot about how all of us who are scientists deal with scientific bias. And we all have to be wary of it, because we may be missing important findings because of our certainty that they can't be possibly there.
Right. And why is it that the standard prescribed therapies for cardiovascular disease and other chronic illnesses, for example, have not succeeded in resolving this problem?
Well, the reason that they have not succeeded in resolving this is because they're not targeted towards it. In cardiology, we've developed a panel of cardiovascular risk factors. Some are reversible, some are not. Not reversible is age, male sex, stuff like that. Reversible ones are things like hypertension. We can treat hypertension, high cholesterol, real diabetes, etc. The problem is that these risk factors were initially identified in a series of epidemiological studies, the Framingham study, the famous Framingham study in Framingham, Massachusetts, where populations were followed. They were tested for these factors that were thought to might be risk factors. And then in time, some of them panned out, like high blood pressure is very tightly associated with stroke. Cholesterol is associated with heart attacks. But nobody looked at lead, and nobody looked at cadmium. Nobody looked at arsenic. So if you don't look, you don't find. And so it is now, in the last decades, that we have been looking at it, at these metals in populations, in large populations. And consequently, we've been finding that what appears to be a trivial amount of lead is associated with a significant increase in the risk of hypertension, stroke, heart attack, and death, and peripheral artery disease. Same with cadmium and same with arsenic. Those three are probably the ones that are most associated with vascular disease, disease of the arteries. So, you know, we thought that we understood the principal coronary risk factor. We don't. Environmental cardiology was not, you know, was a term coined by a gentleman, Dr. Bhatnagar, in 2002. He wrote an article in Circulation Research on environmental cardiology, dealing primarily with pollutants, air pollutants, and so on. You know, it's 20 years later. And, you know, I'm inviting him to work with us on a statement on metals and cardiovascular disease. So, you know, things move slowly, but they do move, but they move slowly. You just have to stay on it.
Just a postscript that the results of the clinical trial where large amounts of heavy metals were flushed out of patients as their critical limb ischemia was improved dramatically have indeed been published in peer-reviewed journals. We've heard from Dr. Lamas that toxic metals are significant players in heart disease and that removing them from patients results in people getting better. The questions that still remain are, what can be done to make these and similar methods available to all the people who need them, and what can we do to prevent these metals from getting into us in the first place? Those are the topics of our next edition of The Nature of Longevity, Meanwhile, let us know what you think by contacting us at info@calcify.com. That's info@calcify.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back shortly.